I blinked slowly, numbly. Victor, Tawny, I must find them.
They don't matter right now. I need to get you out. Damn it,
he cursed, as I turned away, desperately scanning the mass of people for those I cared about. He grabbed for me, but my arm was too slippery. He lost his grip as I raced into the churning mass of people. Tawny, I screamed, moving past an older man. Victor, Tawny!
Poppy!
Hands grabbed my back, and I spun. Tawny clutched me, her mask gone and her hairdo half fallen.
Oh, gods, Poppy!
Holding on to her, I looked over her shoulder and met Lord Mazine's icy stare.
Good to see you're still alive, he said.
Before I could respond, Victor shoved through, pulling me away from Tawny.
Are you hurt?
He shouted, wiping the blood on my face.
Are you injured?
My lips parted. I saw the Duchess behind us, surrounded by guards. Beyond them, I saw the Duke. Flames crawled and licked up his legs, climbing over his torso and spreading across his arms.
My gods,
Tawny said. I thought she saw what I did, but then I realized she was facing the entrance. I turned. They stood in the entryway, and at the broken windows, dozens dressed in the ceremonial garb of the rite, their faces shielded by silver masks.
Wolven.
Their facial coverings had been designed with the characteristics of the wolven. Ears, snouts, elongated fangs. Those at the entryway were armed with daggers and battle axes. Those at the windows had been the ones to fire the arrows. There were dissenters, possibly even Atlanteans among the masked. It struck me then. They had been among us the entire night. I thought of Agnes, of what she had said and how nervous she'd looked, and how Victor had felt as if there'd been more she hadn't told us. Had she known and tried to warn me? Not the guards and the commoners who lay injured and dead on the floor, not the ascended who'd fallen, not Lauren and Daphina who'd never harmed a single person. My hands curled into fists.
From blood and ash,
one of them shouted. Another yelled, we will rise!
From blood and ash,
several yelled as they started down the steps.
We will rise!
Victor grabbed me as I took hold of Tawny's hand.
We need to move fast,
he said, nodding at the commander who was now beside the Lord. The royal guards surrounded the Duchess and us, pushing back through the masses. Every part of me was sickened as they guided us through the crowd toward the open door where people were being thrown back. We were escaping and they were being held in.
This isn't right, I said.
And then I yelled it over the screams as I was pulled through the door.
They're going to be massacred.
Ahead of me, the Duchess's head whipped around and her black eyes met mine.
The royals will take care of them.
Normally, I would have laughed at that. The royals? The ascended? Who never seemed to raise a hand? Who would take care of them? But there was something in her eyes, almost where her pupils would be if I could see them. It was like burning coal. We went through the doorway and others went out into the great hall. They weren't guards, they were ascended, male and female, their eyes carrying that same unholy light. Racing along, I looked over my shoulder as the last of the ascended swept through the door. Her crimson gown like a cape. A royal guard closed the door behind her and then stood with his back pressed against it. His short swords crossed. Guards streamed past us as we ran through the foyer, around the statues, and I looked at every one of them, hoping and fearing that I'd see Hawk. Each face that passed me was unfamiliar. And then the screams from the great hall ceased. My steps faltered. Tawny looked back too. The screams had simply stopped.
Come, Poppy,
Victor urged. We spilled into the banquet hall. A guard came running over, his face and arm spotted with blood.
They're at the back entrance, surrounding the whole damn castle. The only way out is through them.
No,
the Duchess argued.
We wait them out. Here. This room will do.
She stalked forward.
They won't make it to us.
Your Grace, Victor started.
No.
The Duchess turned to him, that same odd fire I'd seen earlier in her eyes.
They will not make it to us.
Her gaze snapped to me.
Bring Penelope.
The skin around Victor's mouth tightened, and we exchanged looks. He shook his head.
I held on to Tawny's hand as we crossed the room and moved into one of the greeting rooms.
In the back of my mind, I was at least grateful that it hadn't been the room Melissa had been murdered in, because there was a good chance that we were all going to die in here. The commander remained outside, sword drawn, and I knew he was going back to the hall. My dagger practically burned against my thigh.
As the door closed behind us, I let go of Tawny's hand and looked around. There was only one window, but it was far too small for anyone but a child to climb through.
The Duchess dropped into a settee, her lips pressed into a firm line. Lord Mazine went to her, and I saw that several royal guards remained inside.
Dear girl, you look like you're about to pass out from fright, the Duchess said to Tawny. We will be just fine in here, I assure you. Come.
She patted the seat.
Sit with me.
Tawny glanced at me, and I gave her a discreet nod. She drew in a shallow breath and then joined the Duchess, who turned to the Lord.
Bran, why don't you pour us some of the whiskey?
As the Lord rose to obey the Duchess, I looked at Victor and whispered,
This is incredibly stupid.
His jaw flexed.
If they make it in here, we're all sitting ducks.
I kept my voice low.
That is, if we don't burn alive from the flaming Duke.
He turned from the Duchess as he nodded. Are you armed?
Yes.
Good. His gaze fixed on the door. If anyone makes it in here, do not hesitate to use what you've been taught. My gaze lifted to his in question. I don't care who sees you, he whispered.
Defend yourself.
Exhaling slowly, I nodded, and then there was only the sound of glass clinking against glass, and then nothing more. The guards remained focused on the door, and I stayed near Victor, checking on Tawny every so often. She was staring straight ahead, the drink virtually forgotten in her hand. Each time I looked, the Lord was staring back at me. How unfair that he still breathed when so many others did not. I didn't care how unworthy that thought was, I meant it. I didn't know how much time passed, but my thoughts wandered to Hawk. Fear trickled through my blood like ice. Lightly touching Victor's back, I waited until he faced me.
Do you think Hawk is okay?
I whispered. He's good at killing, he answered, refocused on the door. I'm sure he's fine. A lot of the guards who'd fallen had been good at killing. All the talent in the kingdom meant nothing when an arrow came out of nowhere. I forced myself to take a deep, slow breath. The Duke was dead. Macedonia had become the next Goldcrest Manor. But Tawny was okay, so was Victor, and Hawk had to be. This wasn't going to turn out like the night the Craven had come, when my mother... Something hit the door, causing Tawny to gasp. She clasped her hand over her mouth. Victor lifted his finger to his lips. I held my breath. It could have been anything. No need to panic. Yes, we were fish in a barrel, but we were... The door rattled with the next impact, shaking the hinges. Tawny rose, as did the Duchess. The guards moved to block the entryway, drawing their swords. Wood cracked and splintered as the deadly edge of a battle axe breached the portal.
What did you say, Your Grace?
The Lord said, sighing.
That they wouldn't make it to us?
Shut up, she hissed. We're fine. A chunk of wood fell. We were not fine. Victor looked over his shoulder at me. Our eyes met, and I let go of the breath I had been holding. I turned, planting my foot on the seat of an empty chair. I gathered up my skirt.
Now this is getting interesting,
the Lord remarked. My gaze met his as I unsheathed the dagger, wishing I could shove it through his heart. He must have seen that in my stare because his nostrils flared.
Penelope, gasped the Duchess. What are you doing with a dagger?
And under your skirt, no less. This whole time?
A high, panicked giggle snuck out from around Tawny's hand where it covered her mouth, and her eyes widened.
I'm sorry, I'm sorry.
Duchess Tierman shook her head.
What are you doing with a dagger, Penelope?
Doing my best not to die, I told her. Her mouth dropped open. Knowing I would hear about this later, if there was a later, I turned back to the door. The hall had quieted. Nothing moved beyond the gash in the wood. One of the royal guards crept forward and bent down to peer out. His head tilted to the side.
Shit, he exclaimed, turning. Get back.
I jumped, as did Victor, but two of the guards weren't fast enough. The door blew off its hinges and smacked into them, taking one of them down while the other was caught in the chest by the battering ram. I heard a sickening crunch. Victor swung his sword, cutting through bone and tissue. The battering ram hit the ground, along with an arm. A man screamed, stumbling back as blood pumped from the severed limb. He fell to the side, and then they swarmed, swallowing Victor and the guards. There was no time to give in to panic or fear as one of the dissenters stalked forward, flipping the battle axe in his hand. I had no idea if they were here for me or just to shed blood, but with the mask and how I was dressed, they had no idea that I was the maiden. The man behind the wolf mask chuckled.
Pretty dagger.
They had no idea I knew how to use it. He raised the battle axe, and I thought the Duchess screamed. Maybe it was Tawny. I wasn't sure, but the sounds they made faded into the background as I let instinct take over. Waiting until the axe blade whistled through the air, I then shot forward, darting under his arm. I spun behind him just as he turned, slamming the dagger into the back of his neck, right in the area I used to end the cursed. He was dead before he even realized that I'd killed him. As he fell forward, I saw the Duchess staring back at me, her mouth hanging open.
Behind you!
Tawny shouted. Whirling around, I hit the ground as another axe swept through the air. I kicked out, sweeping the man's leg out from under him. He went down just as Victor turned, his sword arcing through the air as he brought it down. I popped to my feet as a dissenter moved to shove a dagger into Victor's back. I shouted a warning and Victor threw out his elbow, catching the man under his chin, snapping his neck back. A dissenter rushed me, axe swinging. I darted to the left just as something, a glass, smacked into the dissenter's metal mask. I glanced over my shoulder to see Tawny sans glass, but she wasn't empty-handed for long. She grabbed the decanter, holding it like a sword. I shot forward, thrusting the dagger deep into the dissenter's chest. He went down, taking me with him. I landed on top of him with a grunt and started to rise. A booted foot kicked out, catching my hand. Fiery pain erupted as the dagger was knocked from my grasp. It hurt and punched the air from my lungs. Gods, it stung. I reared, falling on my butt. I looked up, scrambling backward. My aching hand rubbed over the handle of an axe. Above me, the dissenter lifted a sword with two hands, prepared to bring it down. My heart lurched in my chest.
She's the maiden,
the Duchess shrieked.
She's the chosen.
What the? The dissenter hesitated. Hand tightening around the handle of the axe, I shot forward, dragging the heavy weapon through the air. He tried to move back, but I caught him in the stomach. Blood sprayed as he shouted, dropping the sword to cradle his midsection. His bile hit the back of my throat as I brought the axe down on his neck, ending what would have surely been a painful death from disembowelment. Hand aching, I dropped the axe as a dissenter took down one of the guards and then moved toward Tawny, his sword dripping blood. Lifting the axe over my head, I did just as Victor had taught me. I made sure the blade was perfectly straight as I brought it back over my head and then heaved it forward, releasing it. It winged through the air, striking the dissenter in the back. He toppled forward, his sword falling to the floor.
Gods,
Lord Mazin uttered, staring at me with wide eyes. Remember that, I warned, sweeping down to pick up the fallen short sword. And this, I spat. light and double-edged, I sliced open the throat of the next dissenter. Breathing heavily, I turned back to the door just as Victor thrust his sword through the last dissenter. Only one other guard remained standing. I lowered the sword, my chest rising and falling as I stepped over the body parts.
Is that all?
Victor glanced out into the hall.
I think so, but we shouldn't stay here.
There was no way in the world I would stay in this room. The Duchess and the Lord could do whatever they wanted. I turned to Tawny.
How?
The Duchess demanded, her hands and clothing free of blood and gore, while I had to be swimming in it.
How is this possible?
She demanded, staring down at the mess.
How?
I trained her, Victor answered, shocking me.
I've never been more glad that I did than I am right now. I don't believe she's in need of any royal guards,
the Lord commented dryly, his nose wrinkling as he flicked something off his tunic.
But so very unbecoming of a maiden.
I was 2 seconds away from showing him just how unbecoming I could be. Victor touched my arm, drawing my attention to him.
Later, he mouthed. Come.
He glanced at Tawny.
This isn't safe.
Really?
Whispered Tawny, still holding the decanter as she came forward.
I would have never noticed that.
Victor's gaze shifted back to me, and even though his cheeks were more red than golden, he smiled.
You make me proud.
I'd wanted to throw something at him while we'd been in the garden, but now I wanted to hug him. I stepped toward him just as Tawny shouted. Time slowed to a crawl, and yet there wasn't enough time to stop any of what was happening. Victor twisted at the waist, facing the door, looking to where a wounded dissenter had risen to his feet, his sword lifted. It hummed through the air, the blade shiny with blood.
No!
I shouted. But it was too late. The sword found its target. Victor's body jerked, his back bowing as the sword punched through his chest, just above his heart. Shock crawled through his face as he looked down. I stared too, unable to process what I was seeing. The dissenter tore the sword free, and my own weapon slipped from my hand as I tried to catch Victor. He couldn't fall. He couldn't go down. He staggered as I wrapped my arms around him, his mouth opening and then closing. His legs went out from under him, and he toppled. He fell. I didn't remember joining him as I pressed both hands against the wound. I looked up, tried to call for help. Without warning, the dissenter's head flew in the opposite direction of his body, and I saw Hawk standing there, his eyes a fiery amber, his cheeks speckled with blood and soot. Behind him were more guards. As Hawk's gaze swept the room, it landed on us and then stopped. I saw the look on his face, in his golden eyes, as he lowered his bloodied sword.
No,
I told him. Hawk's eyes closed.
No, no, no.
My throat hurt as I pressed my hand to Victor's wound, and blood gushed against my palm, streaming down my arm.
No, gods, no, please. You're okay, please.
I'm sorry, Victor rasped out, placing his hand over mine.
What?
I gasped.
You can't be sorry. You're going to be okay. Hawk,
I snapped my head up.
You have to help him.
Hawk knelt at Victor's side, placing a hand on Victor's shoulder.
Poppy, he said quietly.
Help him,
I demanded. Hawk said nothing, did nothing.
Please, go get someone, do something.
Victor's grip tightened on my hand, and when I looked down, I saw the pain settling into his features. I felt his pain through the gift.
I was so shocked, so thrown. I hadn't even thought to use it.
I tried taking his pain, but I couldn't concentrate, couldn't find those happy, warm memories.
I couldn't do anything. No, no,
I said, closing my eyes. I had this gift for a reason. I could help him. I could take his pain, and that would help calm him until help came.
Bobby,
he wheezed.
Look at me.
Opening my eyes, I shuddered at what I saw. Blood darkened the corners of his two pale lips.
I'm sorry for not protecting you.
His face blurred as I stared at him. The blood wasn't pouring from the wound as freely now.
You have protected me. You still will.
I didn't.
His gaze tracked over my shoulder to where Lord Mazin stood.
I failed you as a man. Forgive me.
There's nothing to forgive you for, I cried. You've done nothing wrong. His dulling eyes fixed on me.
Please, I forgive you.
I rocked forward, dropping my forehead to his.
I forgive you. I do. I forgive you.
Victor shuddered.
Please don't,
I whispered.
Please don't leave. Please, I can't do this without you. Please.
His hand slipped from mine. I drew in air, but it went nowhere as I lifted my head, looking down at him. I frantically searched his face. His eyes were open, his lips parted, but he didn't see me. He didn't see anything anymore.
Victor.
I pressed down on his chest, feeling for his heart, for just a beat. That's all I wanted to feel, just a heartbeat, please.
Victor?
My name was whispered softly. It was Hawk. He placed his hand over mine. I looked at him and shook my head.
No.
I'm sorry,
he said, gently lifting my hand.
I'm so sorry.
No,
I repeated, my breath now coming in short, rapid pants.
No.
I do believe our maiden has crossed a certain line with her royal guards. I don't think her lessons were at all effective.
A wave of ice swept from the top of my skull and moved down my spine as Hawk looked up at the Lord. His mouth moved, and I thought he said something, but the world simply fell away. I couldn't hear Hawk over the buzzing in my ears, over the absolute burning rage pounding through my veins.
Forgive me. I failed you. Forgive me. I failed you.
I was moving, my hand finding metal. I rose from the blood, turned around. I saw Lord Mazin standing there, barely a speck of blood on him, hardly a strand of hair out of place. He looked at me. Forgive me. He smirked. I failed you.
I won't be forgetting that anytime soon,
he said, nodding at Victor.
Forgive me.
The sound that tore from me was a volcano of fury and pain that cut so deep it irrevocably fissured something inside of me. I was quick, just like Victor had taught me to be. I swung the sword around. Lord Mazin was unprepared for the attack, but he moved as fast as any ascended could, his hand snapping out as if he planned to catch my arm. And I bet he thought he could. The smirk was still there, but rage was faster, stronger, deadlier. Fury was pure power, and not even the gods could escape it, let alone an ascended. I cut through his arm, through tissue, muscle, and then bone. The appendage fell to the floor, useless, like the rest of him. The surge of satisfaction was bliss as he howled like a pitiful wounded animal. He stared at the blood geysering from the stump just above his elbow. His dark eyes went wide. There was shouting and screaming, so much yelling, but I didn't stop there. I brought the sword down over his left wrist, severing the hand that had held mine down on the Duke's desk, ripping away the last shred of modesty I had as the Duke brought the cane down on my back.
I failed you.
The Lord stumbled back against the chair, his lips peeling back as a different sound came from them, one that sounded like the wind when the mist came in. Spinning the sword, I swept it in a wide arc. This sword, Victor's sword, found its target.
Forgive me.
I sliced Lord Brandol Mazine's head from his shoulders. His body slid to the floor as I raised the sword and brought it down, hacking into his shoulder, his chest. I didn't stop. I wouldn't until he was nothing but pieces, not even when the screams and shouts became all I knew. An arm came around me from behind, hauling me back as the sword was wrestled from my hands. I caught the scent of pine and woods, and I knew who held me. I knew who pulled me back from what was left of the Lord. But I fought, clawing, swinging to be free. The hold was unbreakable. "Stop," Hawk said, pressing his cheek to mine. "Gods, stop. Stop." Kicking back, I caught him in the shin and then the thigh. I reared, causing him to stumble. "Forgive me." Hawk crossed his arms around me, lifting me up and then bringing me down so that my legs were trapped under me. "Stop, please," he said. "Poppy." "I failed you." The screaming was so loud it hurt my ears, my head, my skin. In a distant, still functioning part of my brain, I knew I was the one screaming like that, but I couldn't make myself stop. A flash of light exploded behind my eyes, and oblivion reached for me. I fell into nothingness. Chapter 27. Half resting on the inner ledge, I stared out the window at the torches beyond the rise, eyes aching and weary with the pressure of tears that wouldn't fall. I wished I could cry, but it was like the cord that had connected me to my emotions had been severed. It wasn't that Victor's death didn't hurt. Gods, it ached and throbbed every time I thought his name. But that was almost all I'd felt in the week and a half since his death. A sharp slice of pain that cut through my chest. No sorrow, no dread, just pain and anger. So much anger. Maybe it was because I hadn't gone to his funeral. I hadn't made it to any of the funerals, and there had been so many dead that 10 or more were held at a time, or so I had heard from Tawny. It hadn't been my choice not to attend the services. I'd been asleep. I'd been sleeping a lot this week, entire days just gone in a blur of sleep and drugged consciousness. I didn't even remember Tawny helping me bathe away the blood and gore, or how I got back to bed. I knew she talked to me then, but I couldn't recall a single thing she'd said. I had this weird impression that I hadn't been alone while I slept. There was a sensation of calloused palms against my cheek, fingers brushing hair back from my face. I had the faintest memory of Hawk talking to me, whispering when the room was filled with sunlight and when it had been taken over by night. Even now, I could feel the touch against my face, my hair. It had been the only grounding connection I had while I slept. I squeezed my lids shut until the phantom sensations vanished, and then I opened my eyes. It wasn't until about 4 days after the attack on the right that I'd learned that Hawk had used some kind of pressure point on my neck to render me unconscious. I'd woken up sometime later in my room, unable to use my voice. The screaming, it had torn up my throat. Hawk had been there, so had Tawny, the Duchess, and a healer. I was offered a sleeping draft, and for the first time in my life, I took it. I might have kept taking it if it hadn't been for Hawk removing the powder from my room 4 days ago. It was then I learned that the attack on the rise hadn't been the only one that night. The dissenters had set fire to several of the opulent homes along Radiant Row, drawing guards from the rise and the castle. That was where Hawk had been after he'd left the garden, which explained the soot on his face. The fires had been a smart move by the dissenters. I had to give them that. With the guards distracted, the dissenters were able to move through the night, taking out guards stationed around the castle before they even knew they were there. They were able to commence wholesale slaughter before the guards who'd gone to Radiant Row could even be summoned. No one could be positive what the message the attack on the right had been meant to send, or even if they had been searching for me. None of the dissenters were taken alive that night, and many of those who had escaped had slipped back into the shadows. The Ascended had done what the Duchess said they would do. They got their hands dirty, but their assistance had come too late. Most who'd been left in that room had died. Only a few had survived, most so traumatized that they couldn't even recall what had happened. Well over 100 had died that night. Gods, I'd rather be asleep than awake. At least when I slept, I didn't think about the Duke burning from where he had been hung and impaled. I couldn't think about Daphina's one blue eye, or how Lauren had tried to go back to her friend, only to be struck down. I wouldn't remember how it had felt to crawl over people who were dead or dying, unable to do anything to help them. The metal wolf masks didn't haunt my sleep. Neither did that smile Victor had given me, or how he'd told me that he was proud. Asleep, I didn't think about how the last words he'd ever spoken were a plea for forgiveness, for him not protecting me. And I couldn't remember how my gift had failed me when I needed it the most. I wished I'd never said what I did in that garden. I wished I'd never gone to the right, or gone out into the willow. If I'd been in my room, where I was expected to be, we wouldn't have been in the thick of it. The attack still would have happened, and people still would have died, but maybe Victor would still be here. However, a tiny voice in the back of my mind whispered that the moment Victor learned of what was happening, he would have gone down there anyway, and I would have followed. Death had come for him, and that voice also whispered that death would have found a way. In the days I spent lost to the deep nothingness, I couldn't acknowledge what I'd done to Lord Mazeen, and how I felt about it now, or how I didn't feel. There wasn't an ounce of regret. My nails dug into my palms. I would do it again. Gods, I wished I could. And that disturbed me. When I was out of it, I didn't think and I didn't care about anything. But now I was awake, and all I had were my thoughts, the pain, and the anger. I wanted to find every single dissenter and do to them what I'd done to the Lord. I'd tried the second night I was awake. I'd donned my cloak and mask and grabbed the short sword Victor had given me years before, since my dagger was lost to the chaos of that room the night of the rite. I'd planned to pay Agnes a visit. She'd known. Nothing could convince me otherwise. She'd known, and her attempts to warn me hadn't been enough. The blood that had been spilled that night was on her hands. Victor's blood tainted her skin. My mentor and friend, who'd drunk her hot cocoa and comforted her. She could have stopped all of this. Hawk had caught up to me halfway through Wisher's Grove and all but dragged me back to the castle. The chest of weapons had been removed from my room at that point, and the servants' access barred from the stairwell. And so, I sat. I waited. Each evening I'd been awake, I waited for the Duchess to summon me, for punishment to be rendered, because I'd done something so expressly forbidden that it made everything I'd ever done before an afterthought. I'd killed an Ascended. Maiden or not, there had to be some kind of punishment for that. I had to be found unworthy. A knock drew my gaze from the window. The door opened and Hawk strode in, closing the door behind him. He was dressed in the uniform of the guards, all black except for the white royal guard mantle. No one had replaced Victor's position yet. I didn't know why. Maybe after seeing what I was capable of, the Duchess realized that I no longer needed as much protection. But protecting myself would be kind of hard to do without access to any weapons. Or maybe it was the fact that I'd already gone through 3 guards in 1 year. Or could it be because so many had died during the attack, and they were shorthanded? My back tensed as Hawk and I stared at one another from across the room. Things had been weird between us. I wasn't sure if it was because of what had happened in the garden, and then with Victor, or if it had been what I'd done in that room after Victor's death. It could have been all of that. But he was quiet when he was around me, and I had no idea what he was feeling or thinking. My gift was hidden away behind a wall so thick that it couldn't even crack. He said nothing as he stood there, just crossed his arms over his chest and stared at me. He'd done that a time or 500 since I woke. Probably because when he tried to talk to me, all I did was stare at him, which was also probably why things were weird. My eyes narrowed as the silence stretched between us. What?
Nothing.
Then why are you here? I demanded.
Do I need a reason?
Yes.
I don't.
Are you just checking to make sure I haven't figured out a way out of the room? I challenged.
I know you can't get out of this room, Princess.
Don't call me that, I snapped.
I'm going to take a second to remind myself that this is progress.
My brows furrowed.
Progress with what?
With you, he answered.
You're not being very nice, but at least you're talking. That's progress.
I'm not being mean, I shot back.
I just don't like to be called that. Uh-huh,
he murmured.
Whatever.
I tore my gaze from his, feeling... I don't know what I was feeling. I squirmed, uncomfortable, and it had nothing to do with how hard the stone was beneath me. I wasn't mad at Hawk. I was just angry with everything.
I get it, he said quietly.
When I looked at him, I saw that he'd moved closer, and I hadn't heard him. He was only a few feet from me now. You do?
I lifted my brows. You understand?
Hawk stared at me, and in that moment, I felt something other than anger and pain. Shame burned through me like acid. Of course, Hawk knew, at least to some extent. But still, he probably knew better than a lot of other people.
I'm sorry.
For what? The hardness had eased from my tone.
I said this to you before, shortly after everything, but I don't think you heard me, he said.
I thought about those vague sensations of him being beside me.
I should have said it again sooner. I'm sorry for everything that has happened. Victor was a good man. Despite the last words we exchanged, I respected him, and I'm sorry that I couldn't do anything.
Every muscle in my body locked up. Hawk,
I don't know if my being there, like I should have been, would have changed the outcome, he went on. But I'm sorry that I wasn't. There was nothing I could do by the time I did get there. I'm sorry.
You have nothing to apologize for. I rose from the ledge, my joints stiff from sitting for so long. I don't blame you for what happened. I'm not mad at you.
I know.
He looked above me and out the window to the rise.
But that doesn't change that I wish I would have done something that could have prevented this.
There are a lot of things I wish I would have done differently, I admitted, staring at my hands. If I'd gone to my room...
If you'd gone to your room, this still would have happened. Don't put this on yourself.
A heartbeat later, I felt his fingers under my chin. He lifted my gaze to his.
You're not to blame for this, Poppy. Not at all. If anything, I...
He cut himself off with a low curse.
Don't take on the blame that belongs to others. Do you understand?
I did, but that changed nothing, so I said... 10. His brows knitted.
What?
10 times you've called me Poppy. One side of his lips tipped up. The faintest trace of the dimple appeared.
I like calling you that. But I like calling you Princess more.
Shocker, I replied. He dipped his chin.
It's okay, you know.
What is?
Everything that you're feeling, he said.
And everything that you're not. My breath caught as my chest squeezed, and it wasn't just pain doing that. It was something lighter, something warmer. How he knew was proof that, in some way, he'd been where I was right now. I didn't know if I moved or if he did, but my arms were suddenly around him, and he was holding me just as tightly as I was him. My cheek was plastered to his chest, below his heart. and when his chin dropped to the top of my head, I shuddered in relief. The tender hug didn't fix the world. The pain and anger were still there. But Hawk was so warm, and his embrace was, gods, it felt like hope, like a promise that I wouldn't always feel this way. We stood there for some time before Hawk pulled back, and as he did, he smoothed the unruly strands of hair back from my face, sending a shiver of recognition through me.
I did come here with a purpose, he said. The Duchess needs to speak with you.
I blinked. So it was time.
And you're just telling me now?
Figured what we had to say to each other was far more important.
I don't think the Duchess would agree, I told him, and the expression on his face said that he didn't really care. It's time for me to find out how I'll be punished for what I did to the Lord, isn't it?
Hawk frowned at me. If I thought I was delivering you for punishment, I wouldn't be taking you there.
Surprise flickered through me, proving it was yet another emotion I could feel. Where would you take me?
Somewhere far from here, he said,
and I believed him. He'd do what no one else would, not even Victor.
You're being summoned because word has come from the capital.
It felt strange when Tawny arrived to help me with the veil, to be wearing it after everything, and even more weird to realize that the castle looked the same as it had before the attack, all except for the Great Hall. It had been barricaded from what I could gather. One brief glance at the room Victor had died in told me that the door had been replaced. That was all I needed to know. The Duchess wore white, like I did, but while I wore the clothing of the maiden, she wore the color of mourning. She sat behind what had been the Duke's desk, looking over a piece of paper. Not the desk that had been in the Duke's more private office. If we'd been meeting there, I had no idea what I would have done. I still couldn't believe how the Duke had been killed. Surely the weapon had been coincidental, but it still pecked away at something in the back of my mind. The Duchess glanced up as the door closed behind us. She looked different. It wasn't the color, or that her hair was pulled back sharply from her face in a simple twist. It was something else, but I couldn't place it as I walked past the benches. There were two other people in the room, the commander and a royal guard. Her gaze flickered over me, and I wondered if she could tell that I had left my hair down beneath the veil.
I hope you're doing well, she paused, or at least better than the last time I saw you.
I am well, I said, and that felt like neither a lie nor the truth.
Good. Please take a seat.
She gestured at the bench, and I did as she asked. Tawny sat beside me, but Hawk remained standing to my left. I did everything in my power not to think about how Victor belonged here.
A lot has happened while you've been resting,
the Duchess started.
The Queen and King have been notified of recent events.
She tapped one long finger on the parchment. The message must have been sent through carrier pigeon to the capital, but only a huntsman would deliver a royal message here. He had to have ridden night and day, changing horses along the way to have made it back. It generally took several weeks to travel that distance.
After the abduction attempt and the attack on the right, they no longer believe it's safe for you here,
the Duchess announced.
They have summoned you back to Carcedonia.
I knew this was coming. Since the abduction attempt, I'd accepted that there was a high chance that the Queen would summon me to the capital, and I knew that could mean an earlier than expected ascension. That was probably why I wasn't surprised. But it didn't explain the lack of dread and fear. All I felt was acceptance, maybe even a little relief, because this castle was now the last place I wanted to be, and I wasn't thinking about what could happen when I got to the capital. I wasn't even thinking about seeing Ian again. I knew what else I felt, though, and that was confusion.
I'm sorry, I blurted out.
How am I not punished? Hawk turned to me, and without looking, I knew he probably had the same expression on his face that Victor would have had. The Duchess didn't respond for a long moment until she said,
I assume you're speaking about Lord Mazin.
My stomach tightened as I nodded. Her head tilted.
Do you think you should be punished?
I started to respond as I would have 2 weeks ago, before the attack, back when I was still trying so damn hard to be what I was beginning to believe I was never meant to be. I don't think I can answer that question.
Why not?
Curiosity marked her features. Because there was a history there. I settled on that, aware of how Tawny shifted so her leg pressed against mine. I drew in a deep breath. I know I should be punished.
You should,
she agreed. He was an ascended, one of our oldest. Tension radiated from Hawk as I felt him move just the slightest bit toward me.
You cut him up like a butcher would a slab of meat, she continued.
I should have felt horror or disgust, anything other than the surge of gratification that swamped me.
But I'm sure you had your reasons.
My mouth dropped open. The Duchess leaned back as she picked up a quill.
I've known Bran for many, many years, and there is very little about his personality that I'm unaware of. I had hoped that he would have known better, given what you are. Apparently I was wrong.
I tipped forward. Did you?
I would not ask that question,
she interrupted, her unflinching stare locking on mine.
You would not like my answer. Nor would you understand. Neither would I expect you to. Take this as a much-needed lesson, Penelope. Some truths do nothing but destroy and decay what they do not obliterate. Truths do not always set one free. Only a fool who has spent their entire life being fed lies believes that.
Chest rising and falling, I snapped my mouth shut and sat back. She knew. She'd always known about the Lord and the Duke. Maybe not what they'd done exactly, but she knew. My fingers dug into the skirt of my gown.
You're the maiden, she continued. That is why you will not be punished. Count your blessings and do not speak of them ever again.
A muscle twitched under her eye.
And do yourself a favor.
Do not waste another moment of thinking of either of them.
I know I will not.
I stared at her as her white-knuckled grip on the quill eased. It struck me then. If the Duke had treated me as he did, why had I assumed he would treat his wife any differently? After all, I'd never seen them being loving towards one another, and that went beyond the almost cool nature of the ascended. I'd never seen them touch. Being an ascended didn't mean you were no longer in a position to be abused. Lowering my gaze, I nodded.
When do I leave for the capital? Tomorrow morning, she answered. You will leave with the rise of the sun.
Chapter 28. I'm not leaving Tawny here, I stated, squaring off with Hawk. There's no way. She is not coming with us. His eyes flashed a fiery amber. I'm sorry, but no. We were in my chambers no more than 30 minutes after we'd left the Duchess's office. We also had an audience. Tawny was there. So was the commander. But it was like they weren't even in the same building. Hawk and I had been arguing for the last 10 minutes. It's a good thing you're not the one in charge, I pointed out, turning to the commander.
I'm sorry, maiden, but I'm not traveling with you.
Commander Jansen stepped into the room from the doorway.
Only a small group is going, but Hawk is your personal royal guard. He takes the lead.
How can he possibly take the lead? I almost shouted. He hasn't even been my royal guard for that long.
But he is your only royal guard.
That statement threatened to sting, so I whirled on Hawk and did the only completely immature thing I could. I took it out on him. You seriously expect me to leave her here, where dissenters are murdering people left and right?
You seriously expect me to bring her out beyond the rise?
Tawny stepped forward.
If I may,
yes, I exclaimed. You're taking me out beyond the rise.
Exactly. Only a handful of guards can be spared to escort you. All of them will be focused on keeping you safe, not her. I know you can protect yourself. Everyone in this room knows that, trust me. But we're going out there, Princess, out beyond the rise. Do you know the path we will have to take? He demanded. We'll have to travel through the barren plains and the blood forest.
Trepidation had my stomach dipping.
I know. And we will also be traveling through areas heavily populated by dissenters. This will not be a smooth trip, and I will not risk your safety,
he said, as he glared down at me. Gone was the hawk who'd held me so tightly and tenderly only hours before. In his place was a royal guard Victor would have been proud of. There was no stopping that sting. Hawk wasn't my friend, or whatever he was to me in this moment. He was a royal guard, duty-bound to keep me alive and deliver me safely to the queen and king. He dipped his chin, eyes latched to mine. If we take Tawny with us, we may as well just send her ahead and use her as craven bait.
I gaped at him. That was possibly the most absurd statement ever.
No more absurd than standing here arguing with half of your face, he retorted.
I threw up my hands. That sounds like your problem, not mine. Jaw working as he stared down at me, he barked out a short laugh and then turned to where Tawny stood.
I know you want to accompany her. I understand that. But this is not going to be like a normal caravan. There won't be dozens of guards, and we won't be staying at the finest inns. Our pace will be fast and hard, and there is an extremely high likelihood that the right will not be the last time you see bloodshed.
I turned to Tawny, but before I could speak, she said, I know, I understand. She came forward.
I appreciate that you want me to come with you, Poppy, but I can't.
A feather could have knocked me over. You don't want to? She'd been so excited about seeing the capital. But if I wasn't here, then her time would be hers, at least a good majority of it. I pressed my lips together.
I want to, badly.
She stopped in front of me, clasping my hands. And I hope you believe that. But the idea of going out there like this terrifies me.
I wanted to believe her.
She brought our joined hands up to her chest. Not only that, but what Hawk said is true. So many guards are gone. And the ones going with you cannot be focused on me. I can't fight. Not like you can. I can't do what you did.
What I did? Did she mean when I defended myself or what I'd done to the Lord?
I can't go,
she whispered. Closing my eyes, I exhaled raggedly. She was right. So was Hawk. It would be irresponsible and illogical for Tawny to travel with us. And while I was worried about leaving her behind in a city in such a state of unrest, I was arguing because I was leaving everything familiar behind. So much had happened, so many losses. And while I didn't have the brain space or the emotional capacity to worry about the possibility of the ascension moving up or even being found unworthy by the gods, I wasn't borrowing tomorrow's problems. But everything kept shifting and changing, and Tawny was the last of what used to be. What if I didn't see her again? Drawing in a shaky breath, I couldn't let myself think like that. I couldn't let Tawny think that. I opened my eyes. You're right. Tears gathered in her eyes. I hate being right.
Thank the lords there's someone rational in this room,
Hawk muttered. My head shot in his direction. No one asked for your input. Commander Jansen whistled under his breath.
Well, you got it, princess.
He smirked when I dropped Tawny's hands and turned to him. He walked to the door and then stopped.
And I have more input for you. Pack lightly, and don't bother taking that damn veil. You won't be wearing it.
Eyes closed and chin lifted to the rising sun. I reveled in the feel of the cool morning air kissing my bare cheeks and brow as I stood beside the black walls of the rise. It was such a small thing, but it had been years since the sun and wind had touched every part of my face. My skin prickled pleasantly, and even the reason I was able to do this didn't tarnish the moment. The veil made me a very obvious moving target as we traveled to Carcedonia. The best way for us to avoid dissenters and the Dark One was to ensure that no one we came into contact with realized who I was, which was why our group was gathering near the rise, and I wore a plain dark brown cloak with a heavy sweater underneath it, and my lone pair of breeches and boots. I had no idea what people would think when they saw me, but they definitely wouldn't think of the maiden. It was also why I'd said my goodbyes to Tawny in my room. The few castle staff that would be moving about may recognize Tawny as my companion, and Hawk was taking no chances by ignoring the possibility that dissenters could still be among those who worked in the castle. And that made it even harder to say goodbye to Tawny. Anything could happen between now and when she joined me in the capital, and I'd have no idea until someone decided to tell me. That caused my stomach to twist with helplessness, because there was nothing I could do about any of that. I could only hope that I would see her again. I could believe that I would, but I wouldn't pray. The gods had never answered my prayers before, and it no longer felt right to ask them for anything when I could no longer deny what Victor had claimed, that I wanted to be found unworthy. I sighed, concentrating on the sensation of the wind lifting the wisps of hair from around my forehead and temple. The Duchess hadn't come to say goodbye. It didn't surprise me, and it didn't hurt like it had before. There wasn't even disappointment, and I wasn't sure if that was a good thing or a bad one.
You look like you're enjoying yourself.
Opening my eyes at the sound of Hawk's voice, I turned around and almost wished I'd kept my eyes closed. Hawk wasn't dressed like a guard as he stood next to a massive black horse. His dark brown breeches hugged his long legs, showcasing the strength of his body. His tunic was heavy and long-sleeved, suited for cold weather, as was the fur-lined cloak. In the sunlight, his hair was the color of a raven's wings. Somehow he looked even more striking dressed as a commoner. And he was staring at me, one eyebrow raised, while I was just gawking at him. My cheeks heated. It feels nice.
For the air to touch your face,
he asked, figuring out what I was talking about. I nodded.
I can only imagine that it does.
His gaze flickered across my face.
I much prefer this version.
Biting down on my lip, I reached out and lightly rubbed the side of the horse's nose. He's beautiful. Does he have a name?
Being told it's Seti.
I smiled at that. Named after Theon's warhorse. Seti nudged my hand for more pets. He has big hooves to fill.
That he does.
Hawk replied.
I'm assuming you can't ride a horse.
I shook my head no. I haven't been on one since. My smile widened. Gods, it was 3 years ago. Tawny and I snuck out to the stables and managed to climb on one before Victor arrived. My smile faded as I dropped my hand and stepped back. So no, I can't ride.
That will be intriguing.
He paused.
And torturous, since you'll be riding with me.
My heart skipped over itself as I looked over at him. And why is that intriguing? And torturous? One side of his lips curved up. The dimple appeared.
Besides the fact that it will allow me to keep a very close eye on you? Use your imagination, Princess.
My imagination didn't fail me then.
That's inappropriate, I told him.
Is it?
He dipped his chin.
You're not the maiden out here. You're Poppy, unveiled and unburdened.
My gaze met his, and the surge of anticipation and relief proved that under the pain and anger, other emotions simmered. And what of when I arrive at the capital? Will I become the maiden once more?
But that's neither today nor tomorrow, he said,
turning back to one of the saddlebags on his horse.
I brought something for you.
I waited, wondering what it could be, since the only thing I'd been able to pack was underclothing and two additional sweater tunics. Opening one of the saddlebags, he reached inside and pulled out something folded in a cloth. He unwrapped it as he turned to me.
My heart stopped and then sped up when I saw what he held in his hand, recognizing the ivory-hued handle and the reddish-black blade. My dagger!
My throat clogged.
I thought it was lost.
I found it later that night.
A sheath lay under it.
I didn't want to give it to you when I had to worry about you running off and using it, but you'll need it for this trip.
The fact that he was making sure I was equipped to defend myself in case it was needed meant the world to me, but the fact that he'd found the dagger and kept it safe for me?
I don't know what to say.
I cleared the hoarseness from my throat as he handed it over. The moment my fingers curled around the handle, I let out a shaky breath. Victor gave me this on my 16th birthday. It's been my favorite.
It's a beautiful weapon.
The clog dissipated, and all I could do was nod as I carefully sheathed the dagger and then secured it to my right thigh. It took a moment for me to speak.
Thank you.
Hawk didn't respond. When I looked up, I saw a small group approaching. Two unfamiliar men on horses and six other men leading their mounts toward us. I recognized two of the guards immediately. I'd played cards with them at the Red Pearl, Phillips, and I believed the other was called Eric. If they recognized me, it didn't show, as they greeted me with curt nods, neither meeting my eyes. My scars tingled, but I resisted the urge to touch them or to turn so they weren't visible. I was surprised to see them, knowing that they weren't huntsmen, but I supposed there hadn't been enough available to join us, and I was happy to see Phillips. He was someone who'd faced Craven time and time again and was still standing.
The party has arrived,
Hawk murmured, and then louder, he began to make introductions. He rattled off names, almost a blur beyond the two I knew. But then he said another name that tugged at my memory.
This is Kieran. He came from the capital with me and is familiar with the road we must travel.
It was the guard who'd knocked on the door the night at the Red Pearl. It was like a reunion, I thought, as I finally got to see him. He looked to be about the same age as Hawk, his dark hair trimmed close to the skull. His eyes were a striking shade of pale blue, reminding me of the sky during winter, a startling contrast to his warm beige skin, reminding me of Tawny.
A pleasure to meet you,
Kieran said as he mounted his horse. Same, I murmured, noting that he had the same slight accent as Hawk, a lilt I still couldn't place. He looked toward Hawk, the angles of his face sharp, and more than pleasing to the eye.
We need to be on our way if we have any hope of crossing the plains by nightfall.
Hawk turned to me.
Ready?
I glanced west, toward the center of Macedonia. Castle Tierman reached high above the lower ward and the citadel, a sprawling structure of stone and glass, of beautiful memories and haunting nightmares. Somewhere in there, Tawny roamed, and the Duchess assumed control of the city. Somewhere in there, my present had become the past. I turned to the rise. Somewhere out there, my future awaited. Chapter 29. Within a few hours of our trek across the barren plains, I no longer had to rely on my imagination to know what Hawk had meant when he'd said that I'd be riding with him. There was little space between our bodies. It hadn't started out that way, as the heavy doors of the rise had opened and we passed the torches. Aware that the men traveling with us knew who I was, I sat straight and desperately ignored the feeling of Hawk's arm around my waist. But the pace was hard. It wasn't a dead run, but unused to how a horse moved, the stiff position quickly became awkward and painful. With each passing hour, I ended up closer to Hawk, until my back was pressed to his chest and my hips were cradled by his thighs. The hood of my cloak had slipped at some point, and I left it down, partly because I wanted to feel the wind on my face, and in part because I could feel Hawk's warm breath against my cheek every time he leaned down to speak to me. I'd been right. For a maiden, this was wholly inappropriate. Or, at least the way it felt to be held by him was inappropriate for a maiden. But after a while, I relaxed and cherished the sensation of being in his arms, knowing that when we reached our destination, this would be over, no matter how well Hawk believed his skills were. Things would be different in the capital. I stared out over the empty land. At one time, there'd been farms here, and inns, where people could stop and rest. But now there was nothing but endless grass, bent and twisted trees, and tall reeds climbing over the broken ruins of farmhouses and taverns. I was convinced that everyone we passed was haunted. The Craven had destroyed the plains, tainting once fertile ground with blood, and slaughtering anyone who dared to set down roots outside the rise, and so close to the blood forest. I kept my eyes peeled for the first glimpse of the forest, and did everything not to think about where the sun was currently at and where we'd end when night fell. Hawk shifted, and somehow half of his arm ended up slipping between the folds of my cloak. My mouth dried as the horse slowed. Hawk's palm was against my hip, and although the wool sweater and my pants separated our skin, the weight of his hand was like a brand. "You doing okay?" he asked, his breath dancing over my cheek. "I can't really feel my legs," I admitted. He chuckled. "You'll get used to it in a couple of days." "Great," I said, drawing in a deep breath as I felt his thumb move over my hip. My grip on the horn of the saddle tightened.
"You sure you ate enough?"
We'd snacked on cheese and nuts as we rode, and while I'd typically have had a much larger lunch by now, I wasn't sure I could learn how to eat while being jostled by the horse. I nodded, noting that Kieran and Phillips, who were at the front, had also slowed. They'd been speaking to one another on and off, but they'd been too far away from me to hear what they said. "Are we stopping?" I asked.
"No."
My brows knitted. "Then why are we slowing?"
"It's the path."
Eric, who rode to our left, cut himself off, and I grinned. I knew he was about to call me maiden, something he'd done so many times over the last couple of hours that Hawk had threatened to knock him off his horse if he did it one more time.
"The path gets uneven here, and there's a stream, but it's hard to see through the growth." "That's not all,"
Hawk added, his thumb still moving, catching the wool and dragging it in a slow, steady circle. "It's not?"
"You see, laddie?"
Hawk was talking about one of the huntsmen who rode to our right. The man hadn't said much since we left.
"He's keeping an eye out for Barats."
My lip curled. Barats weren't your average rodents. Rumored to be the size of a boar, they were the things of nightmares. "I thought they were all gone."
"They're the only thing the Craven won't eat."
"Didn't that say something?" I shuddered. "How many do you think there are out here?"
"I don't know,"
Hawk's arm tightened around my waist, and I had a feeling he knew exactly how many. I looked at Eric. He averted his gaze.
Do you know how many, Eric?
Well, I know there used to be more, he said,
sending a nervous glance at Hawk. He immediately faced forward.
They didn't used to be a problem, you know? Or at least that was what my grandfather told me when I was a boy. He lived out here, one of the last ones.
Really? Eric nodded as Hawk's thumb continued moving.
He grew corn and tomatoes, beans and potatoes.
A faint smile appeared.
He would tell me that the Barats used to be nothing more than a nuisance.
I can't imagine rats that weigh nearly 200 pounds being only a nuisance.
Well, they were just scavengers and were more scared of people than we were afraid of them,
Eric explained. But I was confident that I would be scared of them, whether they left people alone or not.
But with everyone moving out, they lost their
food source, I finished for him. Eric nodded as he scanned the horizon.
Now anything they come across is food,
including us. I really hoped Luddy had perfect eyesight and a sixth sense when it came to Barats.
You're intriguing, Hawk commented as Seti trotted ahead of Eric.
Intriguing is your favorite word, I told him.
It is when I'm around you.
I let myself grin because no one was watching, and I wanted to. Why am I intriguing now?
When are you not intriguing? He said. You aren't afraid of dissenters or Craven, but you're shuddering like a wet kitten at the mere mention of a Barat.
Craven and dissenters don't scurry about on all fours, and they don't have fur.
Well, Barats don't scurry, he replied. They run, about as fast as a hunting dog locked onto prey.
Another shudder made its way through me. That's not helping, he laughed.
You know what I would love right about now?
For there to be no talk of giant people-eating rats? Hawk squeezed me, and I felt a dip in my chest.
Besides that,
I snorted.
Do me a favor and reach into the bag by your left leg. Be careful, though. Hold on to the pommel.
I'm not going to fall off. I held on, though, stretching forward and lifting the flap of the bag.
Uh-huh.
I ignored that and reached inside. My fingers brushed over something smooth and leather. Frowning, I grabbed hold of it and pulled it out. The moment I saw the red cover, I gasped and shoved it back into the bag.
Oh my gods!
I sat up straight, my eyes wide. Hawk burst out laughing, and ahead, Kieran looked over his shoulder at us. Could he see how red my face was?
I can't believe you!
I turned at the waist, and for a moment, I got a little lost in that dimple in Hawk's right cheek. The left one was starting to appear too, and then I remembered what was in the bag.
How did you even find that book?
How did I find that naughty diary of Lady Willa Collins? I have my ways.
How?
The last I'd seen it, it was shoved under my pillow, and with everything that had happened, it hadn't even occurred to me that someone might find it and have questions.
Lots of questions.
I'll never tell, he replied, and I smacked his arm.
So violent.
I rolled my eyes.
You're not going to read to me?
No, absolutely not.
Maybe I'll read to you later.
That was even worse.
That's not necessary. You sure?
Positive. His laugh was low and soft against my neck.
How far did you get, princess?
I pressed my lips together and then sighed.